Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Today we're going to spotlight the Chamber Music Society of Logan. This community organization started in the living room of a USU physics professor 44 years ago. Now, their current season includes the acclaimed vocal group Chanticleer. We're going to be hearing some music from Chanticleer and other groups included in the current season. We'll talk about the state of classical and chamber music as well, and look to the future with current CMS chair Charlie Heeneman and program director Cahill Smith. Probably also getting into talking about what can you do with a philosophy degree? What can you do with a music degree? That may resonate with people. The legislature is certainly talking about that stuff right now, and some other topics as well. So we welcome in Charlie Heeneman. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom. It's always fun to be on your program.
We'll have you pull the microphone close
All right.
to your mouth there.
Here I am.
So, I mean, people know you. I know you as a philosophy professor.
Right.
I didn't know you were involved with the Chamber Music.
Yeah, it might be surprising. I got involved because some years back, I think it was around 2008 or so, our resident string quartet, the Frey Street Quartet, performed the entirety of Beethoven's string quartets over a couple of weeks. This is kind of a musical achievement, like climbing Everest or something like that. It's a huge deal. And that was connected with a course on Beethoven taught by Chris Shear in the music department, and with guest lecturers, and I was one of the guest lecturers on the legacy of Beethoven. And I have always been a fan of classical music and jazz and other genres, but never really paid enough attention to a form like a string quartet. And I was blown away. I mean, this was a life-changing time for me. And I got so excited. And the Frey Street Quartet just knocked it out of the park. Mm-hmm. It was still, to this day, one of the greatest intellectual and spiritual, if you like, experiences I've had. And so that got me interested. And then I slowly got involved with CMSL. And here I am. Yeah.
All right. We also welcome in Cahill Smith, who is program director for the group. Also a performing pianist, right? And associate professor.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
In the Department of Music. Let me ask you, how did you get involved in this career? Was it very early? I want to be a pianist.
Oh, great.
At some point, you said, probably.
Well, yeah, that's a long story. You want the short version or the long
one? Yeah, either way.
Let's go with the short version. Yeah. For the kind of circles that I end up running in professionally, I was probably a little bit of a late bloomer. Grew up in the middle of nowhere in Alabama. Wasn't really exposed to a lot of this music. Didn't get to have that Beethoven exposure to the Frey Street Quartet as a child. I got to hear my first kind of professional pianist concert. I think I was 15. But I had started some piano lessons a little bit younger, mainly for my own interest. I've kind of seen someone doing it for an opera production, became interested in it. I got some lessons and kind of learned to play by ear at first, and then saw the first piano recital by someone who would eventually become my teacher, Yakov Kosman. He was a Van Cliburn competition. It's a huge international piano competition. Ended up winning the silver medal and moving to Alabama, of all places. And so I heard that concert, and I was like, wow, okay, I've got to do that. And how do I do that? And that's when I really had to start playing catch up and got a really great teacher back in Alabama, Ronald Chen. He kind of whipped me into shape and helped me to transition from one of those average American kids doing sort of like everything, soccer, baseball, debate team, choir, and then really focusing in, learning how to practice and be devoted to that on a regular basis. So, yeah, I'm going to school for it, getting some really great concert opportunities, and getting to do a lot of other unique and interesting things as a musician along the way.
Yeah, that's great.
But you can still start if you'd like to. I mean, we can have a lesson right after this.
All right.
My studio's right across the street.
Well, I do, quote-unquote, play the piano.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I took piano lessons, which
I
quit earlier. You know, I regret quitting. But for church, they made me the pianist
when
I was 12.
Wow, that's fantastic.
For the men, you know, the congregation. Uh-huh.
Happened to me, too. Sorry, go ahead.
I played one hymn. It was the easiest one that I could play, for those who are in
Come
my,
to Jesus and Whole Notes.
Sweet Hour Prayer.
Sweet Hour Prayer.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
Which doesn't have any sharps or flats.
Hey, good.
Good.
We sang that hymn for a month before I learned another one. They were very patient with me, those men. So that was well, that's a nice memory.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just generally, I mean, all of this, the chamber, Cahill's very rich career and chamber music and all the fancy stuff at Carnegie Hall and whatever is rooted in just that joy of people playing music together and loving to be together and listening to music. And it's important not to let all the professional, famous stuff, industrial sorts of stuff, get in the way of just that very ordinary, heartfelt moment of having music together.
And so that is chamber music, right? That's how it began, right? Just you just play it amateurs, right?
Yeah.
In the best sense, that's how it started, right?
Absolutely, yes. And I love how you said that. It's one of my favorite words in music and culture, amateur. So, because I used to think that was kind of a negative thing. Oh, this is an amateur musician. But no, it comes, I mean, the root of the word, Charlie could probably tell us, it's in love, right?
Yeah, there's the amos is in there.
Yeah.
The love. It's somebody who does it for the love of it, not for money.
That had a huge, you know, sort of in the origins of chamber music, that those kinds of people who both loved and appreciated and also played it were part of the driving force behind the compositions and those kind of things when it was really getting off the road.
It's called chamber music, and chamber isn't a word that we use except for like chamber of commerce or something like that. But it could have just been called living room music, right? Maybe originally the living room of a king or something.
Yes,
so a very fancy living room. But then it, you know, became, and Cahill can say much more about this, but just became the music you play in your living room with your friends and for your friends. So it's meant to have a more kind of down home or even folksy sort of feel to it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it had kind of a unique and interesting history as it developed, because it went from being this cultural practice of nobility and then eventually transforming into a kind of a counterculture thing for everyone to enjoy. Today it's probably the most actively changing and always flexible sort of genre, with all kinds of new music being written for this type of music. But from the sort of technical definition for professionals, chamber meant usually like a palace chamber for 17th century musicians. It would be something like that. But and also means one player per part. So no doublings like there are in an orchestra or larger ensemble, and each individual has kind of a crucial part to play. You could think of it as a small battalion of kind of elite generals. And it's about the ratio of sound, the intimacy. Charlie mentioned an experience listening to Beethoven string quartets played by the resident quartet here, the Fry Street Quartet. And there's a famous quote by the poet and literature giant Goethe. He first heard a Beethoven quartet, and he wrote that was the first time that music sounded like a rational conversation between four players. And so lots of people probably have heard a big symphony orchestra concert, which I also love for totally different reasons. But a large ensemble has some limitations or things that it doesn't do as well, especially in the flexibility of time, being able to adjust really quickly with a small group of people. Usually in an orchestra, it's the conductor who is kind of leading the musical interpretation or where you want to go with this piece. But in a chamber music setting, it's much more democratic. So everyone gets kind of a voice in putting that together. And when you reduce the number of players to that kind of smaller scale, there's a much greater potential for what I like to call the chamber music instinct, which is this you know, the groups they're relaxing together, they're communicating with each other, they're adjusting their timing, sound, balance, and all those things kind of instinctively in ways that you can't do with a large ensemble. And that's, I think, what keeps us all going back to the concert sometimes is to see that.
Can I add a little bit to that?
Please.
Because that's what really strikes me in going to a chamber music concert. It's the same as like going to a jazz concert where you watch the players and you can see how much attention they're devoting to one another. And responding, it's a conversation, it's a musical conversation. And it's fun to go to a small group, a quartet or whatever, and just see their expressions and their surprise. And because you might think that chamber music or any kind of classical music is all scripted out, you just show up, you play what's on the sheet, and that's it. But there's so much interpretation and give and take and fun and also deeper things like shared sense of beauty, a shared sense of grief sometimes. It really plucks every heartstring. It's really fun.
Yeah,
I
nice
say
one
from
there.
A completely unbiased view.
Yeah, you're right, exactly. Yeah, I too. I love the looks. Right.
Yeah.
You're. It's a conversation. Yeah, it really is. So at a certain point, chamber music kind of left the chamber, and went to the concert hall. That's how we think of it now. I wonder if it's still happening in living rooms.
That's a great question. It's the kind of thing where we might not hear about it when it is because it's done by people for the love of doing it. I know it's happening. I couldn't give you a list of folks to call up. Cahill, do you know more?
Absolutely. I can say without a doubt it's still happening, especially in communities where folks play music frequently. And that's one thing I've loved about moving to Utah. I've been astonished at the kind of grassroots level of music appreciation, how many people do it for the sake of what it does for their brain, their heart, their soul, and just the general level. I mean, you can throw a cat out the window and hit a pretty decent pianist or a good string player in the valley.
We're not recommending that, by the way.
Please don't throw any cats out the window. But my own experiences, I've been part of many of these sort of house concerts before, even starting days in music school where those were some of my best memories actually studying at Eastman School of Music were chamber music parties. Okay, so this would have not been anything like the court of Louis XIV, but someone's rundown rental apartment in Rochester, New York. Everyone gets together, brings their instruments and a big stack of music, and you get together and read and play. Usually on a very out of tune piano, I would be playing. But what was funny about these concerts is that folks in the community, or people that live down the street, would know that they were happening, would show up to try to get in the door and listen a little bit, which is fun. And that would be kind of like the least formal version of that, going all the way up to, just last year I played a true chamber concert in a home. I'd say it was in Park City with a violinist, just violin and piano, chamber music lovers all gathered around listening in a large living room, but enjoying it that way as well.
Yeah. So these impromptu concerts when you were in school, what kinds of music did you play?
Everything.
Yeah.
So probably it would be based on who was around and who had their instrument out and in tune and ready to jump in. So we go from, maybe a Mozart piano quartet to something like a Brahms string sextet or something like that, maybe some Shostakovich, Rachmaninoff, if people are feeling brave.
Yeah.
And depends if someone has maybe read the piece before and they know a little bit about the piece. It kind of lead the performance.
It reminds me of that great scene in the recent movie Maestro about Leonard Bernstein.
Oh, yeah.
And early on, they just show some wild party, and it's Bernstein on the piano and all sorts of, now we recognize as tremendous musical greats, just cutting loose. And having a blast,
yeah.
I wonder, it puts me in mind because my mind flashed on, when you were talking about these parties, you're playing Mozart or whatever. today, if you weren't at Eastman, right, it was some other sort of quote-unquote regular group, you might just put on some Taylor Swift or something, right? flashed to Franz Liszt, who was, mega superstar of his time, right? He was kind of the Taylor Swift of his time, right?
Right.
Absolutely.
In a way, it's a mixed blessing, right? That classical music has ascended to the heights that it has ascended, because we have probably the greatest classical music as an ill-defined genre ever, right? In the history of the universe, because people dedicate their careers and professions to it. And so that's wonderful. On the other hand, it kind of ends up being this somewhat rarefied thing that's only for snobs, right? That's only for rich people. That's only for the cultural elite.
Mm.
And that's too bad, because obviously it speaks to human feelings and human – it's something anyone can appreciate, right? And so I think one of the battles within all forms of classical music is to encourage people to come, right? And to say this is not just for – Mr. Fancy Pants, this is for anyone who wants music, right?
Yeah. And I think chamber music even more so, right?
Yeah,
even fancier pants. That's the stereotype, right? How do you counteract that?
That's true. There is that feeling chamber music. First of all, the word chamber just sounds weird, and it sounds rarefied and all that. So, luckily, a wonderful thing about Cache Valley is that it's folksy and informal enough that I think we do bring many people into the hall. You know, in their blue jeans and T-shirts or sweatpants or whatever. There's no dress code or anything. There is this odd thing. I have to mention this. It's an odd thing when people go to classical music for the first time or chamber music for the first time. It has to do with clapping. It's a funny little thing that somebody will write a string quartet, typically has four movements. And the custom, and it's really just a custom, there's nothing special about this. The custom is to hear all four pieces and then express your appreciation at the end. So there's no clapping between the movements. But that's, it doesn't have to be that way. Historically, it has not been that way. But that's kind of the reigning custom. And that's, I think, an initial thing that, if you're at a concert and you are the one who claps between concerts, you feel like, oh, no, I've tremendously embarrassed myself. It's hard not to feel that, but you haven't. That's perfectly good. Musicians are used to that.
Go for it and do it loudly. Loud and proud.
That's what you'd say as a musician, though, I'm sure.
I don't think I'm allowed to set clapping traditions for CMSL yet. We've been here for a few years. But, Charlie, you're spot on. Historically, folks did applaud wildly between movements.
And they'd say, repeat, play it again.
Yeah,
right?
Please.
Let me hear it
again. That was a traditional meaning of encore, was not to play a new piece, but repeat that movement that you just played that was fantastic. Do it again. Yeah.
I think that's one of the problems in recent years. Classical music has kind of turned into a mausoleum, right? That we, have to be there reverential, hand over our heart,
Right.
where when this was first performed, Mozart or whatever, they reacted very much like you would have. Taylor Swift concert, whatever.
Yeah, it's meant to be fun, right? It's meant to be a human thing, not some, silly, overly sophisticated, straitjacket.
I love that you said that, because to me, as a musician and being there and playing a lot of these concerts myself in my career, my perspective on it could not be more opposite, like a mausoleum. It's absolutely this living, breathing thing with, as Charlie mentioned, a new renaissance of people around the world, especially in the United States, European countries, and Asia, that are really deeply passionate about this. And it's doesn't at all feel like a museum when you're in there in the experience. Folks don't often get the chance to go or don't think that it will be interesting to them, so they miss out on that. But couldn't be more different from the musician's perspective.
And I have to kind of check myself, and I've had a journey with this, because I was introduced to my dad would take me to classical, whole family, including he'd put all eight kids in the station wagon, drive 4 hours to Salt Lake to the opera, right?
Oh, that's fantastic. Dedication.
I look
that
back on
dedication.
That and I think, wow.
Yeah. Good for him.
But, sometimes I'll be sitting in a classical concert, and I'll feel kind of superior. I know not to clap between the...
Guard against that, Tom.
Those
Philistines, they're clapping. But I should be more welcoming, right?
Sure. It's people appreciating music, and that's what I sent. I mean, sometimes once I heard the audience erupt in applause in the middle of a movement, not between movements, but in the middle of a movement. And I think the reaction that I could see, at least judging from the faces of the musicians, was, well, that's great. Right. That means they really loved it. And
absolutely.
And it was a kind of natural point to show your appreciation. So, the expectations are far lower than you might think that they are going in.
What's fun is there are actual pieces of music that are designed to get folks to jump in and clap when they're not supposed to. Even going back to Mozart, there are big surprise cadences where you think it's over, and then there's a little, tag at the end. It's supposed to make people go, and then there's an extra little something at the end. So.
Yeah. Oh, let's take a break. When we come back, I want to get into a little of the history of the Chamber Music Society of Logan and hear some music. We'll start with some Chanticleer and hear some other music, previewing the rest of the season for the Chamber Music Society of Logan. That's who we're spotlighting today. We have the CMSL Chair, Charlie Hedeman, and Program Director, Cahill Smith, and we'll have more following this break.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're spotlighting the Chamber Music Society of Logan today. This community organization started in the living room of a USU physics professor 44 years ago. Current season includes the acclaimed vocal group Chanticleer. We're going to hear some music of Chanticleer coming up shortly, as well as some music from others of the groups featured in the rest of the current season of CMSL. We have with us CMSL Chair Charlie Heeneman and Program Director Cahill Smith. Charlie Heeneman happens to also be a philosophy professor, and Cahill Smith is a pianist and associate professor of music at Utah State University. So, Charlie, tell us a little bit about this. This one of the things highlighted here, as we're highlighting the Chamber Music Society of Logan, is the power of people to affect their community. I guess people got together and said, let's form a chamber society.
Yeah, this is the physics professor in question was Eastman Hatch. Just a legendary man and the most perfect gentleman you could ever hope to meet. And he had spent a sabbatical in Germany and had seen that there was, you know, chamber music societies there. And he came back to Logan, this is 1981, and said, why don't we have one? And so we just, as so many people in Logan do, this is the most stunning thing about our community, is people recognize, oh, we need this, we need that. And they just start it up. And it's really, and it's in, you know, relatively recent history. So that's what he did. And just in his living room, Eastman, Hatch, and his wife Anne hosted string quartets. I'm not sure how long they did that before it then needed to move to a larger venue. For a while, at least when I first moved to Logan, the concerts were being held in the Eccles Conference Center, which I think is a mark of how desperate we were for concert spaces. Not a great spot for concerts anyway. And then, of course, now, thanks to the generosity of the Kane sisters, we have this performance hall that is, no exaggeration, world class. It is a. We have so many groups who have played in so many halls from around the world, and they perform in our hall, and they say this is one of the finest halls we've ever performed in. And it was designed for chamber music. I kid the dean of the Kane College of the Arts, Nick Morrison, who's a great guy and a great friend. I tease him that really it's our hall. It's the Chamber Music Society's hall, and we just let the Kane College use it from time to time. That's not true at all. But it is a hall that is perfect for this kind of music.
So Cahill Smith, what tell me about programming a season. I guess you want a variety of ensembles. I think when we think of chamber music, we think of the string quartet as kind of the standard.
Absolutely.
You know? And this season has at least one string quartet, I think.
Usually two, great question. Yeah, it's, for me, a very exciting and fun way to interact with the community and also, you know, foster some really great music in the Valley. I really think these concerts are incredible every time I sit down, and after all of the work that goes into getting these groups here, all of the
negotiations.
Yes, lots of negotiations. Sometimes wearing down managers over years to see if we can get them to come up to Logan, Utah, these kinds of things. And you finally sit down, and then that's when the magic really begins. I jumped in just a few years ago after the former program director handed it off to me. Her name's Emily Azola. She's also a fantastic pianist and teacher here in the college. And my goal was to, present a variety of music that our community would really enjoy, but also to have a kind of diversity of different ensemble types. That's something I'm really passionate about. So we'll usually start with kind of like an established string quartet and maybe finish up the season with a younger quartet that's kind of just starting a performing career. And they usually do some pretty heavy hitting residency activities for us and go around to the public schools, do some chamber music project with younger students who are just trying to learn the craft and learn the art of the instrument. It's a beautiful thing to see. And then in the middle, we'll have quite a variety of different things from, this year we had a piano quartet in the fall. And then in the spring here, we have this variety of a percussion ensemble, the Third Coast Percussion, who we'll be talking about, and then also vocal ensemble, Chanticleer. And both of those, as was mentioned, the definition of chamber music before is being one player to a part. They're still absolutely in that bucket, and it's fascinating, unique, interesting music where everyone's got their solitary part to play with no doublings. So, it's always an adventure to try to find a good variety that also somehow fits in our budget and that we know we can get tickets sold to. But it's a delightful process, and I enjoy it.
Well, let's talk about Chanticleer and hear some Chanticleer. Hmm. It's a staple here on the UPR. They put out a Christmas special, and we usually broadcast that. So, you know, I know they're wonderful. I think it's a pretty big name. So, Cahill, how did you get Chanticleer? Come to little old Logan.
Well, yeah. I mean, you develop some relationships with these arts organizations and some managers, and then you start to become aware of who else is presenting groups like these in the region. Obviously, getting out here to Logan is a big, you know, struggle for some of the groups. You fly to Salt Lake and somehow get the ground transport up here. It takes a little bit of time. I'm usually looking for when they're playing somewhere nearby, and we might be able to get them on a weeknight or something like that while they're in transit. And that happened to work out with this group. We'll see how it works out when they come in next month. But I had personally had two experiences to hear this group live past concerts, and it was absolutely inspiring concert both times. And I thought, well, this would make a really interesting addition to the program, which, as you mentioned, usually has string quartets, other kinds of chamber music. And I don't think we've had a vocal group in a while. We have had some other a cappella groups.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's and we've had guitar quartets. We've had other percussion ensembles. Mm-hmm. We've had brass groups and
a jazz trio.
Yeah. So we've had a lot of different groups. Yeah.
So people don't know, Chanticleer, all male ensemble, right? Mm-hmm. Although you're going to hear some high parts, right?
Oh yeah.
How many in the group?
I believe it's 14.
14. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they're all singing individual parts, right? And
yeah.
It's amazing the harmonies and the vocals. So let's hear a bit of some Chanticleer. They're singing Ave Maria by Franz Biebel. And in the video, we're going to play a YouTube video, which you could pull up later. You'll just hear the audio. The ensemble is dressed formally, and they're in a circle in this large, well-lit space. So here's just a bit of Chanticleer singing Ave Maria by Franz Biebel.
Angelus Domini, nunciavit Maria. Et concepite Spiritus Sancto.
Ave Maria, gratia plena Dominus
Love to hear the whole thing, but that's
beautiful.
And when I read that title, I had no idea. I heard the first notes, I thought, "Oh yes, I've heard, I've heard this many times. This is a famous piece that Chanticleer does.
It's so beautiful.
It's just
achingly beautiful.
I know. So we've been sitting here talking about music for a while now, but sometimes when you talk about it, it makes it worse.
Yeah,
you know, that's kind of the point of it, isn't it? It's where words fail, and that starts to make sense when you listen to
that's
it.
That's so critical.
Yeah. So that's exactly. Boy, if that doesn't get you to sign up and come to the concert, I don't know what.
Yeah. No, really. Yeah.
It's in February, right? They'll be coming.
I'm so anxious and excited to hear that sound in our hall. Mm-hmm. I think that's just going to be fantastic.
By the way, Chamber Music Society of Logan, mm-hmm. I'm to Chamber Music Society of Logan.org.
Yeah, yeah. You can check us out
the
online.
Website.
Yeah, you can see the history of our past seasons. You can see our list of very generous donors and sponsors. This is really a community organization, and we live on the support of enthusiasts, right?
Yeah.
And that is great because it gives us an independence. It gives us a connection to the community, and we're very grateful that so many people recognize the importance of this music genre.
Mm. Let's see. We've got the Mallet Quartet.
Oh, but yeah, before we jump in there, I was just going to say that concert, to hear Chanticleer, if you'd like to be there, you can check out the website, but the concert date is Tuesday, February 25th,
yeah. Okay,
and we'll hope to see you there.
Yeah, and before
February
that, we've 25th. Got the percussion group in 2 weeks. Yeah, Third Coast Percussion. Yeah. The Third Coast is, of course, Chicago.
Okay. All right, so Third Coast Percussion. We've got, you've sent over to me Sandbox Percussion performing this.
Oh, that's the wrong link.
Is that the wrong
Pardon
link?
Pardon me. Okay, I'll pull one up here. I must have sent the wrong one.
I could Google it here. Yeah. What do we want to do here? Third Coast production?
I've got it here.
One of the wonderful things that is involved in programming our season is that Cahill will provide us with this long list of links, everyone on the Board of Chamber Music. And so we'll all listen to these links and listen to the groups and try to make these decisions. Oh, I want to hear this person. I want to reach out and hear this other kind of group. And so it's a balance of keeping with our tradition, but then also reaching out and trying new things.
Tom, I just sent you a link to your email.
Okay,
there.
Let me.
If you want to open your email there, it should be a little.
See if I can see
I
this
just grabbed the wrong cell in the.
Easy to do.
Sheet
okay,
there.
Here we go. Pull this up here, and we'll have to get past the ad here.
It's fascinating how the world of music is adapted to the internet.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's...
Yeah, you can find anything, really.
You can find anything.
So one thing that ties both of these groups together, they're both Grammy Award winners, and that's pretty amazing for our concert series to be able to present two of those really almost back-to-back right here in Logan. So... Oh, yeah.
We once had the Danish string quartet, fantastic ensemble, and between our signing a contract with them and their performing, they won a Grammy. I think it was the knowledge that they were
Amazing.
Going to be playing in Logan that probably lifted
Must
them up
have been.
In
That's
the
what
award
it was.
region.
Yeah, and I think Third Coast Percussion has seven total nominations now. So if you haven't heard a percussion group, this is the one to hear.
It's not just a drum corps.
No.
Nothing against drum corps, but this is a very different kind of
Yeah, so let's hear this. Anything to set this up? This is Third Coast Production, or Percussion.
Third Coast Percussion.
It's, you know, when you think of percussion, you think of drums. But, of course, it's, you know, there's bells, there's chimes, there's whistles, there's all kinds of stuff that is in the percussionist's repertoire. And when you have a group like this, it's just amazing how much sound they can get out of their instruments. So I guess I'll just say that.
Yeah.
That's probably the most boundary-crossing group that we have. That you'll hear music from very early on to things that are written maybe even just this year. This year is like their 20th anniversary, I believe. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of doing like a greatest hits program, lots of things that have been really popular for them and their recorded albums. But as Charlie mentioned, there are, I don't even know how many percussion instruments on stage. I've looked at all the stage maps and we've worked it out with production to get it all to fit on the stage. But what surprises me about hearing this group is that you think of percussion, you think it's going to be all rhythm and really kind of biting and in your face, but it's actually quite warm and intimate, especially the large marimbas that they use. It can be very vocal, sustained, and you get really kind of everything that you would expect in any other chamber music concert. A wide variety of sounds and timbres that are available.
Oh, this is called Between Breaths, and on the little description it says it's a musical exploration of meditation and rituals. So here's the ensemble Third Coast Percussion. Let's hear a bit of this. I need to unmute it. There we go.
This new album looks at rituals and the ways that they are a part of our daily lives, the ways that they inspire us, and even sometimes the ways that they calm us.
The for this piece, I'm imagining it takes place, you know, 1,000 years in the future, and the world as we know it is largely ended, but there's a small band of hardy survivors who are recreating the rituals of now, the rituals around religion and community and coming together and making music, but they're kind of getting it all wrong.
Tyonde Braxton wrote a piece for Third Coast Percussion called Sunny X. It's impossible to explain the incredible electronic sounds and the very unique combination of electronic and acoustic instruments that make up this piece. Gemma Peacock's piece, Death Wish, is, I think, one of the most moving uses of the marimba as an instrument that I've ever heard. Ayanna Wood's piece, Triple Point, is a kind of a meditation on the different states of matter. So the triple point is a state where a substance is neither gas, solid, nor liquid, but sort of in limbo between these different states. And the piece, as such, has a sort of a restlessness to it.
In Practice is a piece that's multi-layered. It's a piece that really, really moved me. There's moments of absolute joy, and you can hear it. It reminds me of something that was composed to really uplift people. Third Coast Percussion, a group that's lasted almost 20 years, never with a crossword, is really an amazing organization. They all really know how to inspire each other to be almost better than what we are individually. And I feel like the piece In Practice embodies what Third Coast Percussion does.
That's a great overview.
That is.
You see a lot wide variety of the kind of
encourage people to look this up on because the visual is important.
Yeah, stunning.
Yeah. It's called Between Breaths. If you Google Between Breaths, Third Coast to Percussion, you'll bring this up. Yeah. There's one instrument it looked like even kind of like a yo-yo or a.
I couldn't see the screen. I'm not sure.
The guy was twirling it with a string.
Oh wow. Yeah, I can't name that instrument. Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for this concert, specifically to see the instrument interaction. We're very lucky to have a great percussionist here on staff. Jason Nicholson is our director of percussion activities at USU. And so he's been part of this collaboration as well to try to make sure we have most of the instruments that they need that they cannot physically bring on the plane this time. And so we're kind of doing a hybrid of some of his instruments and those that are owned by Utah State University along with what they're bringing to make this concert happen.
So the Third Coast Percussion on January 21st is coming up in a couple of weeks. Let's do another break. When we come back, I want to hear the Dover Quartet.
Fantastic.
Which will be in, what, March, probably?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're spotlighting the Chamber Music Society of Logan with CMSL Chair Charlie Hinneman and Program Director Cahill Smith. More following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're hearing some music, talking about music today. We're spotlighting the Chamber Music Society of Logan. It's 44 years old this season. The current season includes the acclaimed vocal group Chanticleer. We heard a bit of music there, and we heard some percussion just then. We're talking with CMSL Chair Charlie Hinneman and Programming Director Cahill Smith. So let's hear some more music here. Your final concert of the year will be the Dover Quartet with Marc-André Hamelin, I think, right? Mm-hmm. Cahill, you've chosen, a video here of a Mendelssohn String Quartet.
Yes. So what we will not get to hear is the pianist playing for this concert, because this is one-time collaboration, or first-time collaboration, I will say, between a very established, excellent string quartet, the Dover Quartet. It's a two-time Grammy-nominated group, as well as Marc-André Hamelin, who's a worldwide, got to be up in the top tier of pianists. I certainly have always admired him during my career. And he's been here to perform before for the USU's Wasserman Piano Series. So a meeting of two, you know, great musical forces in the pianist and the string quartet. But this clip is just a little bit of the quartet playing a Mendelssohn Quartet.
All right, here's the Dover Quartet playing Mendelssohn String Quartet number 2, movement 1. We'll just hear a bit of this.
Thank you.
We'd love to hear the whole thing, but that's beautiful.
That is so fabulous. It starts off so somber and meditative, and almost like a prayer, and then all heck breaks loose.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
One of the things I love to do in listening to any group like that is, since you can make out the particular voices, the cello and the viola and the violins and so on, is you can just listen to one of those voices and kind of focus on that one voice. And then, of course, you're also hearing the other voices around it. But it's to me just kind of thrilling to hear that voice and follow it responding to the other voices and giving and taking and playing back and forth. It's like a play.
Yeah.
Amazing
really for wonderful. Your mental focus, too. I mean, you're really awake and alive listening that way of Charlie.
Yeah. So this is the stereotypical chamber ensemble, right?
Yeah.
I guess maybe early on, composers decided two violins, a cello, and a viola. That's going to give us the optimal sound. Yeah.
God spoke to Haydn.
I was Haydn who came
We really should have our members of our resident string quartet come talk about the history and the glory of the genre of string quartet music, because I'm biased as a pianist. After my first love of piano music, I'd say string quartet repertoire is got to be up there. It has one of the longest traditions, a lot of the great composers writing for it. But there's a very good reason that particular instrumentation works well just with the typical textures of music. You need that support of the cello, you need the middle voices of the viola, and then the upper parts in the violins where usually there's a little bit more movement, and they can do almost anything. Yeah. I mean, with just those few players. There are string quintets where you can, add another cello or add a viola or a bass. And then when you add the piano, I mean, the piano can also kind of be an equal force with the string quartet. So there are moments in a piano quintet where you'll hear it sort of piano versus string quartet, or piano with string quartet, or sometimes where the pianist will maybe accompany one or two instruments, and you get this amazing kind of dance of interaction between one or two players or three players or the whole group together.
Yeah.
Well, we just have a few minutes left, and I definitely want to get this in, so to leave the music behind and move into
that's sad. Come to the concert.
Yes,
for the Dover Quartet.
Yeah, come to the concert. Yes,
it's happening here March 5th. So
March 5th, and again, Chamber Music Society of Logan.org to get tickets and find out what's happening. So I want to get into a little bit of controversy here. Not too bad, but our listeners are aware. You're aware that the legislature is asking universities to make cuts and. Some legislators, I should say, are concerned that we provide degrees that point to high-paying jobs or to jobs that the state needs, You could think nurses or, whatever it is, and not degrees to nowhere. That's not the current crop. That's Senator Stevenson from many years ago.
Right.
It occurred to me I have a philosophy professor and a music professor here, so... I guess Charlie first. Philosophy degree. The stereotype is this goes nowhere.
Yeah, and it couldn't be more wrong. I mean, the only thing we can't predict is the future. the jobs that will happen, right? The challenges that we'll face. And so, of course, what we want as we're training young people is knowledge and flexibility and skill set and a wider sense of what might be possible. Because the problems that we're faced are going to require some creative thinking. So one shouldn't think that the way to prepare a generation for the future is just by channeling them into one skill.
Yes.
Or one vocation. You want to have people of many parts. You want to have many different people of different parts, right, to assemble your team to handle anything. And so having a background in philosophy, a background in music, in foreign languages, in the arts generally, humanities generally, is just as important, I would argue, as having computer scientists and engineers. I'm not dissing on them at all, of mm-hmm. course. Extremely important skill sets. But we need more than just what we think we're going to need, right?
All right. Just a couple minutes to Cahill Smith. We could just spend a whole hour on this.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, us back. I'm very passionate about this.
The music degree, the stereotype there is starving artist, right?
Certainly. And we all battle with that. You know, but I want to piggyback on something that Charlie said there. It was absolutely the first thing I wanted to say. The future is unknown. And I have a little Wall Street Journal article here that I share with my students often when they're thinking about going into a career field to maybe be a piano teacher. What does this mean for society? And what good are you doing for the world? Amazing Wall Street Journal articles from like 2016 about versatility and employability. So you're talking about high-paying jobs and those kinds of things. 90% of U.S. companies report that it's becoming more difficult for them to find applicants who can just communicate clearly, take initiative, problem solve, and get along with coworkers. So when they interviewed all these executives, 92% of them said that soft skills were more important than the hard technical skills that they might learn in some sort of specific professional training. And I firmly believe music teaches that probably better than a lot of things. It teaches mm-hmm. you to perceive and conceptualize kind of abstract patterns. You're forced just to get through it to have a sustained, intense focus on a single problem or idea. As a pianist, I'm very familiar with multitasking or balancing multiple mm-hmm. activities at once. They need employees that can do that. Develops motor skills, short and long-term memory. All those kinds of things. The discipline to oversee contribution to a project over a long time with little short-term gains, I guess. Critical thinking, improved language, mathematical, spatial plasticity, all of those things. We have great data that show music teaches that faster and more longer lasting than some other kind of specific technical training. I like to think of myself as a specialist. I've spent my entire life really kind of learning to do this one thing, to play the piano and be a pianist. And sometimes I wish I were a little bit more generalized. But yeah, have us back. I'd love to chat about this more. I think it's a very important subject for our community.
All right. Yeah, I'm sure we'll be doing some programs on this. So chambermusicsocietyoflogan.org is the place to go.
Yeah.
For Chanticleer, you got the Dover Quartet with Mark Andre Hamelin and then the Third Coast Percussion.
Right, exactly.
Some great concerts coming up. So we've had the CMSL chair, Charlie Hedeman. Thanks.
Oh, you bet. Always a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having us today.
Thank you. Yeah. By the way, we just have about a minute left. Charlie, mm-hmm. how did the Ask Us Anything event go?
In philosophy?
The philosophers. Oh.
Yes, well, we agreed to that the audience could ask us anything, but we wouldn't answer everything. But no, it was really fun. We had probably... I would guess between 40 and 50 people at the Logan Public Library. Wonderful conversation. And anyone who looks out at the news and sees partisanship and division needs to come to the Logan Public Library when they have an event, because you'll just see wonderful people having a conversation together. And it's very restorative to see that.
All right. That's good.
Beautiful.
Good way to end the program. Program Director for CMSL, Cahill Smith. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having us on. It's really great to talk with you today.
Thank you.
To a concert.
We'll do it. And thanks, everyone, for listening to Access Utah.